Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Oh, we're live. Welcome, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Swinging from the Hip. Excuse the mess all around me. That just basically just highlights the hectic life that I actually lead at the moment. But it's been great to be able to come back onto the show and to host and to get my credentials redone as well so I can actually host the show. So that's all good. And joining me on the show tonight is Taz. Taz, how you doing?
Hey, good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely good. And I've just been 4 days in Christchurch going to a wedding, so that's been good. And yourself, you get out and watched a bit of cricket or played a bit of cricket on the weekend?
Yeah, I kind of filled in as a ring-in for one of our one-day teams and then played Indoor Kiwi on Sunday.
Oh, you played a bit of Indoor Kiwi on Sunday too?
Yeah, first game this season.
Yeah, nice. Well, we will go, we'll try and get this truncated tonight as we have got the T20 between the Black Caps and Australia going on at the moment. So what we will do is we'll try and race through all our content today in about half an hour, you know, famous last words, half an hour, and then we can get back to watching a bit of the old T20 and see where we're at. Obviously, New Zealand, we're struggling early doors, three wickets gone early, but Glenn Phillips and Devon Conway hopefully have got us back on track to post something. I think we're probably going to need something around the 180 mark tonight to sort of put a bit of pressure back on Australia when they bat. What do you think, Taz? 180 is probably a score we're going to need?
Yeah, it really depends how sort of the pitch plays, though. Like, and obviously, we've just started and lost a couple of early wickets, and they've introduced a spinner in the third over or second over, so early on.
Yes.
Yeah, probably halfway through the inning, we'll probably know if it's a good score or not. But no, 93 for 3 of 12. You would expect to score another 80, 90 runs on top of it. So.
I was going to say, look, I mean, I sort of think, you know, with T20 as a stretch, you know, something you want to stretch yourself to is like you look at about the 12, 13 over mark and you sort of think we want to score 100 of the last 7 or 8 overs, you know?
Yeah, you, for that, you've got to have at least one set batsman who bats through.
Yep.
And so we've got Conway, one between Conway or Phillips bat through the innings. If they're there for last two overs, then you would expect to score 100 of, or maybe 90 of the last 8 overs, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's that sort of look. And then if they do that, they'll be around that 170, 180 mark and maybe nudging 190.
Yeah, I think 180 is probably, I think that would be a challenging score there.
Yeah, it will be.
And because it's obviously later in the day, so it might skid on for medium paces later, I don't know.
Yep. See how
but,
it goes.
We've got obviously Trent Bolt who swings the ball, new ball, and
yep.
That's where sort of I think if we can get early wickets, you never know.
Well, unfortunately, it looks like Phillips has just gone. He's skied one up and out cover, and looks like he's just been taken bowled by Stoinis, our friend Stoinis. He's picked up for 30. So. But Devon Conway's still there, and as you said, we want that one set batsman and everybody else to bat around him. So we do bat deep, and hopefully Devon Conway can stick in there to help set that score. Anywho, we'll move along, and as we say, we'll try and go through what's been happening this week in the world of cricket, and there's been a bit of talk with the IPL, with the auction, the player auction going on, but the PSL has actually kicked off, and three matches have been played already in the PSL. We've got in the first match, actually, it's gone and shrunk the names. This is a bit difficult for me.
Gladiators and Karachi Kings.
That's it, yep. And Karachi Kings getting up in that one. And I'll just go through the results and then we'll get you to have a chat about what went down in each game. And then Multan Sultans were playing, oh, Jesus, this is rather frustrating.
Islamabad United, yeah. That's
team. Islamabad. Yeah, that's your team. And they got up. So they got up over the Multan Sultans. And then Qalanders got over the over
Zalmi.
Zalmi? Zalmi? Zalmi. I always get, yeah. So talk us through the games as in terms of what happened in some of those games. Maybe we'll start off with that Karachi Kings win to start with.
Yeah, so obviously Kota batted first against in that game in All Out, and that's where sort of like, you know, they were all out in the 19th over with 10 balls to go. They probably knew that it's not enough runs, and maybe they tried to push for it. Chris Gayle, 39 off 24 balls. So obviously he's back because he actually hasn't had much luck, or he hasn't scored enough runs in PSL so far. But yep. He's changed the teams now. So he's been playing for, he was playing for Lower Kalundas, and this time he's at Kota Gladiators and scored 39 off 24 balls. So there we go.
Ah, sorry. I'll get it up there in a sec. Yep, there we go. On the screen. Oh, you can't see it? How's that? There we go. Is that better?
This is perfect.
Okay, cool.
So I guess, like, you know, they've got a couple of power hitters, Azam Khan and Ben Cutting. Unfortunately, neither of them sort of kick on. And Chris Gayle, obviously, Tom. They actually, if you look at the team they've got like at least five guys who can score 150 plus strike rate. So yep. For that, like, they've got a good combination there. I think just not enough runs. I mean, it's like, because it's a fresh track. So fresh tracks in PSL, you got to be 160, 70. It's probably 170 the par score.
Yep.
In my opinion, anyway. So this 120, just not enough runs on board.
No. And this is, like I say, Chris Gayle finally getting in amongst a little bit of the runs in the PSL, and nobody really stuck around with him.
Yes, yeah, and the most important thing for Gladiators is, like, you know, obviously Chris Gayle has started well, and usually when he starts well, he kind of, you know, he goes well, you know.
Goes well, so, kicks on, gets that confidence up.
So then
we got the Karachi Kings came in, and really not too much of a struggle getting to that score, obviously, in 13.5 overs.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that's the thing with, like, defending small totals. You try to look to get people out early. So yep. They obviously, like, Naseem Shah went for a lot of runs. Kaes Ahmed, Afghanistan league spinner. So he's their overseas player, and he went for a few. I mean, he did well in Big Bash as well in pass. So he's a decent player. But I think once you're defending a small total, you try to sort of, I guess, like, you try to take risk to get wickets. And unfortunately, it didn't work out. But I guess, like, you know, from the word go, you can't defend 126 without taking wickets. And when you do try to take wickets, you kind of, like, you know, go for runs.
Yeah, absolutely. And conversely, as a batting team, because you're chasing a small total, you sort of want to almost see if you can knock a few off, get some good overs under your belt early so that you can make it even less pressure on you. Or do you sort of, like, play it a bit more conservatively because, you know, if you don't lose wickets, you win the game?
Yeah, I guess, like, Shahzil Khan, he got out early, but he's someone who plays freely regardless. He's like David Warner. He's going to play his shots. Then Babar Azam, I mean, he's a world-class player. So I think, like, even if you look at the guys who didn't bat, Imad Wasim, Dan Christian, Amir Yamin, all three of them are, like, kind of all-rounders, but, like, who can bat?
It is.
So they have the depth. They had the depth. So I'm not surprised they went hard.
And then basically moving into the second match, once my screen stops jumping around, I'll just bring that up. Come on. There we go. And I'll put that up on screen. And we've got the Qalandas versus the Zalmi. If I get on the right, I'm obviously very rusty at running the show. And the Zalmi putting on a sort of just below average score at 140 for six.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, they do have like decent bowling lineup. So I'm talking about Qalandas. They do have a decent bowling lineup. So against that bowling, you know, you probably so Shaheen Shah Afridi, especially the, you know, Rashid Khan from Afghanistan also playing.
Yeah.
So you've got two world class T20 bowlers there. So they have to score runs of the other three. I wish they did, you know, because between Shaheen and Rashid Khan, they went for 28 off eight overs.
Yeah.
So that only leaves you with like 12 overs. So they kind of scored 112 of those 12 overs, you know.
Which is not bad.
But Bukhara obviously scored the runs again. But they, Kamran Akmal, one of the top three, has to go big. Imamul Haq, again, like, you know, he's been playing for Pakistan of late. Kamran Akmal has been extremely successful for Zalmi for a few years. Shoaib Malik, again, an experienced campaigner. And Heather Ali has recently been playing for Pakistan. So they have the
firepower, kind
of top heavy in terms of the batting. Unfortunately, as I said, like, Qalandar's, like, you know, the new ball bowler, Shaheen Shah Afridi, is a world-class bowler. And I think that's where sort of, I guess, like, two world-class bowlers in your bowling lineup for Qalandar's, they sort of reduce them to 140, which, again, like, you know, not enough runs.
I was going to say, like, when you've got eight, I mean, like, yeah, you scored well off the three other bowlers, but when you've got eight overs going for 24 runs, or, you know, thereabouts, yeah, you're missing out on a lot of runs there, isn't it? You're missing out on a good 20-30 runs there.
You know, you can do that. You can do that. Like, say, if there were, like, 28 of eight overs of those two bowlers without losing any wickets, though.
Yep.
So they lost three wickets as well, like, so to those two guys. So which makes it sort of like, you know, you're not trying to go after Shaheen Shah Afridi or Rashid Khan, but you're giving them wickets as well.
Yes.
So, you know, Shaheen Shah Afridi, 3 for 14 of four overs.
Yeah.
So if he's gone for 9 for 14 like Rashid Khan, that's fine. But that means you know, obviously three of your batsmen, you know, sort of are in. So it's a tough one, but I guess, like, if you're trying to play out a bowler, like, for less runs, you don't want to give them wickets. And I think that's where they got it wrong there.
Yep, absolutely. If you, and so then the Qalandar's coming in and getting there pretty comfortably, you'd say. They lost a few wickets on the way, but pretty comfortable.
Well, I mean, Rashid Khan, like, right at the bottom, if you see, 27 of 15 balls. So that kind of, like, obviously helped. They needed 32 of four overs or 4.3 overs. They need 30 runs, 32 runs. So it's still like around 8 and over. But this day and age, obviously, it's easily doable. And Mohammad Hafiz has been in good form all year round last year. Like, he scored a lot of runs last year. I think he was the top scorer in T20s all around the world last year. So he just batted through and he didn't really need to push it because Rashid Khan came and he just scored, you know.
I was going to say,
15 balls.
He really has just made sure that he's there's somebody at the other end, and it's you know, they haven't got two fresh batsmen coming in or anything like that. He's just held up that end and obviously rotated strike to give the someone like Rashid Khan the strike to be able to do the damage.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I mean, they on at the top, if you see Fakhar Zaman, known to be a good, like, he's a fast scoring batsman. Unfortunately, he didn't score runs. Sohail Akhtar, their captain, is again a big hitter. So no one really got going, but they didn't have to, eh? Like, yeah, like if someone like Hafiz backed through, and which he did, like, you know, 140 again, not enough runs on board.
Yep. And that's what we're hoping Devin Conway does too, bats through. Anyway, that's a digressing there. Look, I'm thinking it's not fair that Rashid Khan is so good with the ball and then comes in and hits the ball around the bound the field as well.
Well, the thing is with him, I don't know if you've seen him bat lately, but he's kind of like developed. He hits in strange areas, like he's unorthodox the way
he's unorthodox. He's hugely unorthodox.
Yeah, so you can't really set a field for him, you know. And like the last hit he hit, I've set off slow ball and hit. I think he hit it off wide mid wicket for six.
Yep.
And it's like almost a wide ball I've set off. And he still manages to do that. So I guess like it's hard to set fields for someone like him. And he just played his role. Like, you know, he had to score quick runs, which he did.
Almost what the game's inventing these days, isn't it? The batsmen that don't play orthodox shots, that can just get it into strange parts of the field, and then you can't set a field for it. And as a supporter, you pull your hair out going, what are you doing? Set the field properly. So we move along from that, and we go to our third match that's been played so far. And there we go there. Again, the old Sultan's getting up to 150 for eight. Starting to get there, but still slightly below par.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I'm surprised, or I might not know the information about the team selections, but they actually have three leg spinners. So Shahid Afridi, Imran Tahir from South Africa, and Usman Khadir, who's recently played for Pakistan and did well against South Africa. So they actually picked up three leg spinners. And they only played one. So
right. Okay.
So I think they're probably a little bowling light because Shahid Afridi and Sohail Tanvir are seasoned campaigners, great bowlers, awesome. But like, there's not, you know, I mean, Carlos Brathwaite is an all-rounder, so it's kind of they probably lack the depth in the bowling, in my opinion, anyways.
Sure.
You have to have a, like, you know, you have to have, like, at least, if you're playing, you've picked three leg spinners, you should play at least two of them, you know, and T20 cricket. And Imran Tahir has been, like, in past, the world number one bowler. So I'm not sure if he is not there yet or he's just been left out. But Chris Lynn obviously didn't get a start, which we hope he would down the line. Rizwan, the keeper and captain now, is a newly appointed captain of Multan Sultans. He's been in supreme form. Like, he did score runs in New Zealand and he's scoring runs over there against South Africa and then now in PSL. So he obviously gave them a really good start. Your big hitters didn't really sort of show you the freedy. I don't know how many balls he had to, you know, he got a chance to bat. He got out on first ball.
First ball,
Braithwaite. Khushdil Shah, again, known for a good finisher. So possibly they missed out on good 15 runs, and in the end, probably that was the difference.
And that, you're right. And then, and you look at that. I mean, their internationals and their batting lineup at the top, Chris Lynn, James Vincent, Riley Rousseau, they'll want to get more out of those guys, even though Riley Rousseau got 25, but you probably want them to go on, don't you? Get that sort of like 50-plus score out of that top three. You got Rizwan at the top to help him out.
Yeah. No, fair call. I think that's spot on.
And so then your team came through.
Oh, well, I guess...
Tell us about your team.
They made a sort of hard job of it. But Alex Hale, again, like a world-class player. Shadab Khan, in my opinion, batting a bit higher than he should, but he's improved his batting a lot. Power hitter Asif Ali. And Iftikhar Ahmed didn't do, obviously, any good. 9-1. Gregory, he's a bit of a surprise. I mean, he's obviously a seasoned campaigner. So 49 of 31. And I think they finished strong. Fahim Ashraf has been in good form of late. So he's just carried on with his form. But if you look at the team, they've got a lot of current internationals. Current means that who recently, like, you know, Hassan Ali just played for Pakistan. Zafar Gauhar played for Pakistan not long ago. Fahim Ashraf currently playing for Pakistan. Iftikhar Ahmed, Asif Ali played. So they probably got, like, you know, the Pakistani guys they've got, all of them have played international cricket apart from Mohammad Wasim at the bottom in last 6 months. So that helps, you know.
You've got a good experienced squad, that's especially when they've had some international experience as well.
Yes. And like Phil Salt obviously didn't get going, but he's a handy cricketer. I think they've picked the team well. Where they've sort of their planning got a bit affected was Colin Munro was actually meant to play for Islamabad.
Right.
And he couldn't book the quarantine back into New Zealand. So he sort of excused himself. Yep. So he's not playing PSL. So from what I think, if you look at the team, you can just slot in Colin Munro up there.
Yep.
And it's just a complete team in terms of
fashion. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just so people at the moment you're quarantined, you have to get a voucher to get back into New Zealand. Yes. And now that is out to August, I believe, before you can actually book a slot in a quarantine hotel to get back into New Zealand. So if you imagine that the competition, how long does the competition go on for? 6, 7, 8 weeks?
Oh, no, this is probably short. 3 weeks.
Oh,
three,
really?
3 weeks, yeah, it's a short window.
So you'd be finished by the end of March and then you'd be sitting around and waiting for however long before you can fly back to New Zealand, a few months.
I think what Colin said in his statement was that he was a little bit behind and when he tried to book, it was just too long of a wait and he just had to pull out.
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
Which is a shame, but...
And it would be a shame because it's your team as well. And getting someone like a Colin Munro, and he was doing very well for the Scorchers, wasn't he? He was actually, it was sort of a little bit different to the Colin Munro we know. He was actually playing measured innings for the Scorchers. Still a fantastic strike rate, But not just going hell for leather, he was actually batting through the innings while he was playing in the BBL.
Yeah, and I think that's probably, that's what I liked about him, like in Australia, that he actually was trying to bat time.
Time,
because
yep.
in past, he would go early. If he, it works out well, he'll carry on. But I think if you look at consistency, it was probably more consistent, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Even without taking a lot of risks, he was still his strike rate would have been 140 plus.
Yep. That's it, exactly.
Rest, you know?
Yeah, and it's just so, like, I'm a Colin Munro fan, and it's just like one thing that used to frustrate me is it's like, you know, one he, because he used to have those international hundreds or the T20 hundreds, but then there was lean periods in between the big scores as opposed to consistent scores coming through. So, as I said, the consistency in his score making in the BBL was great.
I mean, I guess, like, you know, that's a trade off. Like, he might not look as attractive as he used to.
Yeah,
you know, like playing all those shots like from the word go, but I mean, you know,
but,
he's more consistent, you know.
But his strike rate was still 140, 160.
Yeah.
So, exactly. You know, rather than having every fourth or fifth innings where you're scoring at 180 or 200 and you have one big score, it's much better to 140, 160 and being consistently getting scores in there, because your team's going to be performing a lot better as well.
Yeah, no, I think like you're spot on. And he's obviously, he's kind of, he's a pro, obviously plays all around the world, and he has to sort of find a way. And I think this is the first time I've seen him actually trying to bat time, you know,
which is
good, you know. And that's where I thought like he would do wonders for Islamabad United this year, but unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Out, so. Yes. Thank you, COVID. Well, moving along to Ford Trophies resumed after the Super Smash, T20 Super Smash competition here in New Zealand. And this weekend we had our first rounds where the two teams that they were playing played again. So they played over 3 days. They played each other twice. We had Canterbury and Otago going at it. And Otago. Actually, hang on. I'll just make sure I'll get this right. Just get this here. I'll share the screen. Bring the screen back up. There we go. And we've got down the bottom, we've got Canterbury and Otago. It looks like Otago getting up over Canterbury, and quite convincingly, actually. If we
That's
bring
on the Saturday,
bring...
yes.
Yeah, that was on the Saturday. I've just been away on at a wedding, so I haven't kept up with all the happenings in the of what's been going on the Ford Trophy. But we can see here, Canterbury got bowled out in the first innings for 271 in the final over. In their final over, and Tom Latham getting a good score of 63, but no one really going on. And if they had have held some wickets in hand, probably would have scored over 300.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I guess, like, you know, you need one for scoring 300, you probably need one or two batsmen around 80, 90 mark at least, you know?
Yep, and, absolutely.
But they didn't have a great start. They lost two early wickets. So I guess, like, keeping that in mind, it's still a good effort, 270.
Yes, and then basically Otago coming along and all out for 217, or yeah, they were all out for 217.
Yeah.
So they collapsed after Neil Broome and Anuru Kitchen, who got a good partnership together, and then the rest of them folded.
Yeah, I guess, like, you know, they probably got out not, just not at the right time. They should have probably, you know, one of them had to bat through to win them the
game.
That's
right.
And after that, you can see people have played like a dozen balls and something, but no one really got in. And they needed, like, you know, when that partnership was broken, they needed, like, I think 6.5 and over for the last 20 overs, which usually this day and age is...
That's exactly what I was just going to say. That's pretty much the norm when you're chasing a score of around the 270. And that last 20, you're going to be chasing six runs and over.
If you look at, like, after top four, like, you know, Rippon is an all-rounder. Dave Phillips is a young, really young batsman. Nathan Smith is an all-rounder, then a keeper. So they probably had a long tail, in my opinion. Anyways, you know, they.
Well, you got Mitch McClenaghan coming in. Yeah,
so they,
quite
they
early.
Actually played with four genuine batsmen, and then all-rounders. And five genuine batsmen, and then one, two, three all-rounders. So
I mean, almost Anuru Kitchen, you almost call an all-rounder as well. He is an all-rounder as well.
Rippon was batting for them at seven.
Right,
and
yeah.
He is at five, which means that they're probably one batsman.
One batsman short
of the order, at least, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why Neil and, like, one of the two boys had to go through, and Neil or Anuru Kitchen.
Kitchen. But, yeah, it wasn't to be. And so Canterbury picking up the win there. And that was followed. Where's I gone? Yeah, I was on fixture. Yeah, I was on fixtures, wasn't I? I'm getting all confused.
CD and Auckland.
CD getting 309 for 7 on the outer oval, and you'd sort of think that's going to be a good defendables total.
Yeah, I guess like we all know that the boundaries are not that big, you know? and depending on how used the track is, but generally it's I guess 330 would be a par score there.
You got the mobile petrol station as part of the field, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, depending on what bowling you've got, but still you wanna be around 300 plus at least to give yourself a chance.
That's right. And so Auckland sort of come out and only for the loss of 4 wickets with three overs to spare, getting over the line. And the big one there is, obviously Sean Solier getting 121, but Cole Briggs in his debut match, 101 on debut. Well, fantastic effort from Cole. Young player, don't know much about him. Have you come across his name at all?
Yeah. So I was Auckland under-19s coach about 4 years ago. So yep. Cole was part of it. William O'Donnell was part of it. Glenn Phillips. So he's actually a keeper batsman, wicketkeeper batsman. And he was batting down the order maybe 3-4 years ago. And he's kind of pushed up the order for East Coast Bays and scoring runs. And I'm glad that he got an opportunity to play, to be honest. And he's just proved him, I've seen him bat, but him scoring 100 has surprised a lot of people. Which doesn't mean that he's not good enough. It's just like, where was he before, you know?
Where was he? Yeah. So how old is he now? He's what? He's about 23, 24?
He would be 23. I think he would be around 23, yeah.
Yep.
Maybe 24 this year.
Yep. And jumping ahead, he just missed out on a double on the weekend by 1 run.
Yes. Yeah. And he's actually a regular keeper as well. So that's a plus for Auckland, like having another sort of wicket keeper batsman.
Yeah, well, hopefully they hold on to him. We don't want another Finn Allen situation. So yes, Auckland getting up over the CD in the first match there, and this time I'll hit the results button and I should have rebooted my computer before I started this evening. And that one there, the first one, that one there, here we go, ND and Wellington, Indy, definitely a below par score at 205 off and not quite batting out there, 50 overs. And again, apart from Jeet, it's great to see Jeet Raval amongst the runs there after his move down to Northern. But and Colin also moving down the motorway to Northern as well. So 2 ex Aucklanders helping out the Northern, but not too much else there.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I guess like it would be because Jeet's someone like if he gets a big score, usually it's runnable. So I assume that track might be slow or there might be some, the pitch might not be as good as others, Eden Park, Ardor Oval. Because Jeet, if you see, whenever he scores big in one day cricket, usually it's runnable.
Yeah.
So if he's like his strike rate is 77, which means that probably on the slower side.
Yeah.
Or, probably on the slower side, I would say. So on a slow day, you probably look to score around 240, 250 and try to defend it.
Yep.
Because no one else really got, Colin de Grandhomme obviously scored quick runs as he does. But if you look around, again, Cathony Clark, actually he's a stroke maker. He scores quick runs, but 20 of 38 balls, again, like a surprise. So, it probably would have been a slower day.
And yeah, absolutely. I mean, like Joe Carter, I think he made a few runs before Christmas in the Ford Trophy as well, or might have been the Plunkett Shield. So yeah, it was obviously a tricky wicket to bat on, but Wellington made hard work of it, getting there with 1 wicket to spare. And they were in trouble early.
So I guess Wellington spinners took the wickets as well, but I think Walker is a spinner, but rest of the wickets are taken by the medium pacers or fast bowlers. Phil Annan obviously got early by Kerguelen, which is obviously didn't help. They don't have Conway anymore. He's playing for Blackcaps, so that doesn't help because Wellington's batting, to be honest, apart from Finn Allen, who scored runs in T20s, But yes. Usually it's a Conway scoring runs every single game, you know?
Yes.
And there's people back around him.
And back around him. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, without him, they still managed to sort of get through the total, which was because Colson, new name. He has been playing, but not as regularly. Yep. So two new guys, almost, you know, relatively new guys have scored runs for them. Because Tom Blundell is there for a while. So if you look at the names who've scored runs, relatively new, and good to see that.
Bracewell was the T20 captain, wasn't he? Because I've noticed that Troy Johnson's down as the captain for the 50-over matches.
One best, yes, that's right, yeah.
And then the other thing that stands out, obviously, Scott Kugelhine, not his dad, giving Northern a chance there, picking up three wickets at the top of the innings.
Yes, and Verma as well, obviously. He took
Verma as well, yeah. So
they're like three for not many, but three good for not many at there. All. Yeah, good partnership.
And then basically going back to, so we're going through, and then there was, I'll make sure I get back to results again. And then the return, I'm just making sure I'm on the return. Yeah, there's the return. And obviously on the same pitch again. And this time rolls reversed. Wellington batted first and rolled in the 47th over for 188. So obviously that pitch was a difficult pitch to bat on. And Northern struggled through to 171 all out. So they weren't able to, even with chasing only a score of 188, weren't able to get there. And Jeet Revel, again, top scoring for them with 37, though, only this time.
Yes, and if it's a contrast between the two teams. If you look at the wickets, so obviously there's a run out of 10 wickets for Northern. But out of the 9 wickets, 5 were taken by the spinners.
Yes.
So obviously they played a couple of part-time spinners, and Young Husband is a general league spinner, and then Jacob Holler is a part-timer. Michael Bracewell obviously is ball turnover, so he's more than a part-timer, but like they played 3 spinners. If you go up in the Northerns, so they have, Jeet Rawal is he's under
a real part-timer.
But Joe Walker is the only spinner. So they kind of, Northerns were fastballer heavy. And the fast bowler took the wickets, which is good. But the thing is, on a slow day, your spinners kind of you have an advantage with spinners, and they only played one spinner. So probably that's
surprising. But it is a bit surprising, isn't it? Because Northern do have some good spinners amongst their squad. So the fact that they didn't
I don't know. It might have been an away tour, and they've announced their squad, and they take it 12 days,
sure. Actually, let's have
they
a look.
Obviously unexpectedly they don't know that what the track will be like, so I think it's in Wellington, eh? So it's
there we go, basin reserve, it's in the basin,
obviously not knowing what the track will be like, and Wellington knowing what the track will be like, you know, because
all the fact is that they can call anybody in, can't they?
Northern District got free scoring players, so on a slow deck, Wellington had a better chance. Fair call, they won both the games.
Well, hometown advantage, that's what that's all about, isn't it? So then moving on to Otago Canterbury in the rematch there. And again, Otago batting first this time and getting 263 for 9. Probably happier with that score than they were in the first innings, first game that they played.
Yeah, so obviously they were chasing in the first game, and they batted first in the second one, which kind of helps in a way that they can sort of set a target and then bowl to it. With Nick Kelly, again, Auckland, ex-one used to be in Auckland, fast-scoring player. Neil Broome got a start, and Rippon, all-rounder, he scored 70-odd. So I think they probably put together a decent enough total that they can defend. Bowling-wise, obviously Matt Henry with 3, and Todd Astell is playing. So they played with 2 spinners. So I guess, but both went for some runs.
They definitely went for some runs,
Yeah.
And then... Canterbury basically sort of no one really there's a starts quite a few starts there, but nobody really going on, as we talked about before, when you're trying to get to those high scores around 270, 300, you want somebody to go on and score 80 odd, and nobody did that.
I mean, like, if you look at from the top, Henry Nichols faced 50 balls. International players generally in domestic cricket, when they come down, when they bat, they probably bat through, or they try to bat longer.
End it, run a ball.
Like, yeah, I mean, not like what I'm trying to say is like if they face 50 balls, they're in. You know,
yes.
So they probably, you know, look to go and score quick runs. So I don't know if it's the scoreboard pressure or it's just good bowling.
Good, yeah. So we look at the bowlers there because I've got we got Mitch McLenaghan coming in there for Otago now as well.
Yeah, economical.
Very economical.
Like 3.5.
Interesting, he didn't end up bowling out, but obviously because Canterbury didn't end up finishing, so he would have been looking to bowl that last over.
Last over,
Michael Ray, also very economical there. So they came on as change bowlers and put the brakes on.
Yes, yeah, and Jacob Duffy has got that, like, he's got knack of taking wickets, you know?
Yeah.
So he obviously did 3 wickets and probably at the right time as well. Because Sean Davey was hit when he got them out. So I think within with Mitchell playing for them, they probably got enough experience as a bowling unit. And I reckon, like, you know, more than a part-time spinner. Even Ripon was a regular bowler, probably didn't only bowl 5. So I think they got the right mix for the bowlers. If they've got runs on board, they should be able to defend it.
That's a pretty experienced bowling line, isn't it? When you got Duffy, McLenaghan, Ripon, and Kitchen. And then the guys coming around that. So, and then moving on to that final match that was played over the weekend, the repeat. Oh, Jesus, done it again. Stop jumping around. Is the Auckland versus CD. So, Auckland batting first this time, scoring a very similar total to what they chased down at 311 for 9. There's that 99 we mentioned from Cole Briggs, and real unfortunate not to get that 102 in his first two matches. He would have been, I think they're mentioning one of like about 3 players that have scored hundreds in their first two ODI type matches, or not ODI, but 50 over matches. So very close, but no cigar. But 99, great score again. And again, top of the order's performing. Solia, Briggs, and O'Donnell really scoring the runs. And that means that there's no pressure for the batsman coming in later just to have a go and get that score.
Yeah, the thing is, like, you know, traditionally Auckland's got good finishers. And looking at the names there, they're kind of not really, you know, like in past, if Auckland are like top order scores runs, then Colin de Grandhomme comes at 6, you know, and just, you know, punishes the bowlers further. So I think like they probably they don't have the experienced finishers they used to. So top scorer had to score runs, and they delivered when
really they delivered. Yeah, you've got Somerville coming in pretty early there, isn't it? Somerville's a good batter, but still
Ryan Harrison, good young all rounder. But that's what I'm saying. But they don't have the, like, they used to have the depth, like, you know, in terms of power hitting. So if you've got a good start, then you need good finish, you know. So,
yeah, and interesting one there. Ben Horne obviously maybe picked up an injury or something because Andrew Morrison coming in and keeping wickets.
Yes. So Andrew has been around on Auckland A setter for a few years now. So, Cole could have easily kept, but he's scoring runs, so they probably don't need his keeping, and they can just use another keeper. So it's good that, you know, I mean, Morrison got an opportunity.
Nice. And then really, apart from Will Young, nobody really sticking around, and really central. Bowled out before the 40-over mark as well for 218. But knowing that they have to keep going, it's chasing 300. Even on the Eden Park Outer Oval, you have to keep keeping that scoreboard ticking over.
Yes, yeah, and I assume that it's the second game on the same pitch, and they're playing in the second afternoon. So, like, the more the pitch is used, slightly slower it gets, you know. So Delport, like, a good left arm spinner, so he took, like, you know, out of top 5 he took 3 wickets. So he probably put the brakes on.
And,
On a slow deck, obviously it's hard to hit a spinner, and he's a decent spinner. So but overall I think, like, it's a relatively, well, not even experienced, but young bowling lineup. For Auckland, young means like they haven't played a lot of games, you know.
They're not, age wise, so, they might be a bit older, but they actually haven't got a lot of first class games under their belt.
Ross Ibrack was one of the under 19 boys in my team 3 years ago, 4 years ago, with Cole Briggs and these guys. So he's obviously would have been 23, but he's only been playing since last year for Auckland, so he hasn't played a lot. So I think overall, I think apart from Will Somerville and Sean Solier, Ben Lister has played a few actually. So they've got a good mix of young and old guys. But good to see them defending the total.
Yeah, no. And let's go back up the top. I'm not sure if I just quickly... Can you do this? Let's just see. We'll just bring up the table quickly. Just see. So, obviously, as I said, split rounds. We're just coming back after. So, we played one round now before, or a few rounds before the break at Christmas time for the Super Smash. We've got Canterbury, Northern, and Auckland at the top of the table. It's pretty tight. There's not much in it apart from Central sort of lagging at the bottom. When you look at it from Otago to Canterbury, from 16 to 22 points, not a big difference and still plenty to play for.
Oh, yes, yeah. So last round, obviously, is going to be the key because Canterbury obviously looks like top three team. So one team goes, obviously, in the final.
Yep, and then they have an eliminator. Not in the final,
but they go ahead and then second and third team play that sort of...
eliminator match.
Yes, yeah. And the winning team plays. So it's got like, it's close enough. Like,
yep.
Points table look close enough. I'm not too sure who is playing who next round, but I guess it will be a double hitter. As it was, so it'll be interesting how they finish. But good to see, apart from one team, but rest of them are all like in their, you know, in the mix
with a shot. Like, yeah,
you know, one or two teams just go so far ahead that just, you know, people lose interest in that in the sort of, you know, the competitions.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Super Smash sort of became a little bit like that, where Northern came back into the Super Smash a little bit once their Black Caps returned. But if they hadn't of, it was basically the three finalists had pretty much been decided, so it gets a bit we don't need to follow that anymore. So that's basically the Ford Trophy sort of matches covered off, and just to give you a quick update, New Zealand have batted their 20 overs. Devon Conway unfortunately left one short on 99 for his 100, so getting through to 99. We talked about somebody having to go through. He's done that, and that's meant that New Zealand have ended up on 184.45, which is a well above par total, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think the first six overs will pretty much, you know, sort of, if we get a couple of good early strikes, I think it's we are in it. but I mean, because it's evening, so Bolt and Southie both swing the ball. So if we get, because that's the thing with Australian, they've got strong base and they hit through the line.
Yep. But
if it is swinging, like someone like Bolt, who can obviously take it away and bring it in to right-handers, it's going to be like, I think it's just the skill. You know, it's going to be the sort of test of the skill. And hopefully we get a couple of early wickets and we're in it.
Put some pressure on them. Absolutely. That'll be good. So moving on to our sort of final sort of matches that we'll go over tonight. India obviously won the last test match against England. Obviously, let's just cover that off very quickly. I think, you know, after your explanation and Taryn's explanation last week, when we look at it, you know, there's a lot of talk about the pitch was, I suppose, I will use an emotive word, doctored by the Indians to suit them. And you might say, yeah, look, they did set up a pitch that suited them, but at the end of the day, it wasn't so much that the pitch suited them, it was the fact that they're used to those conditions. And so they were good because they scored 300-plus in that second innings for themselves after England got rolled, and then England got rolled again in the fourth inning. So it wasn't so much a case of the fact that it was an unplayable pitch. It's just the fact that because they play so often on those conditions, they know how to bat on a pitch like that.
Yes, and I think one thing is, like, even after, like, first innings, the focus was off cricket, and people just started talking about the pitch. So with that mindset, England would have always struggled.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just, like, same pitch for both the teams, you know. So I understand that it's, like, you know, obviously it was a pitch more suited to India. But, like, look, I mean, when Pakistan comes, they usually play first test match in Dunedin, you know, freezing cold.
Well, look, with global warming, we don't have that problem anymore. But, you know, I remember back in the 80s when, and as a kid, and this is like, oh, you got to play the first game in Dunedin. So they freeze, they come out with three jumpers on.
Yes,
you can't,
exactly,
How can you move with three jumpers on?
Yeah, exactly. So I think, like, every team sort of country tries to do that to their advantage, and but you pick the teams accordingly, you know. So England has taken enough spin bowlers, They've taken enough batsmen of good spin bowlers. You just have to, as we were talking about before, Ford Trophy, like Northern Districts went to Wellington, and the attacks were probably on the slow side, you know? And Wellington had a chance to pick their team, like,
because they're local. Yeah.
But Northern District didn't, you know? So it's just like you just have to play with what you've got. And as long as focus is on cricket and things you can control. So the pitch, England didn't have any control over the pitch. So the less they worry about it, the better it is.
I mean, like, you know, the thing is that, like, really, as you've alluded to it, the reality is that England's focus became about how they'd been undone by an unfair pitch, as opposed to focusing on how to bat on that pitch. And I remember a good example of that is when the Black Caps went to Sri Lanka and Stephen Fleming scored his 277. And they worked out a plan on how to play Murali in Sri Lanka. And that was basically to sweep the ball. And they set themselves up to do that. So realistically, it's bad planning on England's behalf. They knew that they were going to come up on a pitch like this at some stage, if not early on. They should have been planning and getting ready to play on a pitch like that.
Yes, and with a strategy. Look, I mean, England has taken a spin bowling coach as well, and Jeetan Patel. I guess, like, they've got, it's just like their bowlers are not experienced enough. You know, I mean, Moeen Ali bowled well. I mean, he went for runs, but he took 9 wickets, 8 or 9 wickets. But he's gone now. So
can you look? I don't understand. I read so the match is over, and there were some comments around Moeen Ali, and you know how he hasn't been. Something's gone down. I don't know what's going. Do you know what's happened there? I mean, what's the story? Why is he on his way home?
What England is doing is like they're doing the rotation policy, and they are at the discretion of players and board. Like, you know, so it was decided beforehand that Moeen will be leaving after this test match. So it wasn't like a news. It was basically that was going to happen. So he actually came, when he came to India, he had corona virus. So he had to, or Sri Lanka. So he had to be quarantined for 15 days and he was supposed to play this test match and leave. So that's what he did. So I don't think it was any change of plans. It was things going as planned. I mean, they rested Butler after the first test match. So I think it was all planned how it is. But for some reason, obviously, Joe Root looked frustrated because he really wanted Moeen to stay. And rightly
well,
so. You know?
Joe Root's frustrated. Moeen Ali's frustrated. He obviously didn't want to go home.
Yeah,
well,
I'm
my impressions.
Sure
I could be wrong.
Case.
I could be wrong.
I don't think that's the case. He wanted to go home because he obviously had coronavirus on the tour. And then, you know, I mean, like, once you know when you're leaving after a certain game, you just, you know, you plan that way. But I mean, if he wanted to stay, I'm sure he would have stayed.
Yeah, sure.
So I think it's just he carried on with the original plan.
So this going back to sort of rotation then, I mean, like, I mean, I know, ironically, I host the cricket show, but I actually know more about another sport, and I hate the rotation that they do in the other sport. I'm seeing England, who at the start of this tour needs to win games to make it to the World Test Championship final, and they're doing rotation. Surely, you don't do rotation. You're trying to reach a pinnacle, and you play your best team to try and get a result that gets you to that pinnacle.
Yeah, I think like this year is a bit different though, like with obviously COVID and all that stuff, and there's a lot happening in players' lives, you know, it's not the same as it usually is.
Sure.
They always had the rotation policy, but this year, because, the you know, they're away from their families, quarantined, and they're paid professionals, but it's for their mental health, and I think the focus has been on, like, you know, welfare of the players. They kind of planned it that way. I understand why they're resting fast bowlers in India. Like, you know, why they're rotating spinners or even keepers or batsmen is beyond my understanding. But I see that they were on tour to Sri Lanka before they went to India.
Yes.
So it's a long, like, time away from the family. And I mean, Joe Root played all the games. So I think they're still sort of trying to keep the nucleus of the team while they're rotating the players.
Yep. Okay. Well, that brings us on to the next tour game. I'll just that's going to be played in Ahmedabad in starting in a couple of days. Day nighter. What are you expecting to be a little bit different? I mean, we're going to be another spinning pitch, isn't it? Really?
Yes, I mean, I guess like it depends what time they're starting. If the starting times are like say
Yeah, about 2 o'clock.
afternoon, 2 o'clock. So
I'm guessing about 2 o'clock if
this
it's
time of
Australia, then
year,
India, bye.
that part of the world gets dark around 6:30, six
Yep.
thirties.
Yep.
So or maybe earlier.
Yeah.
Like northern Pakistan where I'm from, like in February it's around maybe around 6:30 it gets dark. So I assume that will be similar or maybe less or more around in India. So
Yeah, more than half an hour.
the temperature actually drops a lot at night. So I'm not too sure how late they're if they're starting late, which means that dew might be a factor. But I mean I'm not sure starting time, but if starting time is 2, dew might play some factor in it. So 2 means what, 9:30 New Zealand time?
So it's saying, I mean, obviously it's bringing up the t start time for New Zealand.
Yeah.
It's 10 p.m. our time that it's starting.
So that's so they probably are
Actually,
starting.
hang on.
So it's 7.5 hours ahead. So they're starting 2:30 there. So
Be
the
30, yeah.
definitely last session would be at night. Like night means like really dark night, you know? So it
With
probably.
you.
Yeah, so I mean, again, like, you know, it's with a wet ball, or if it gets wet, it would be interesting. But it definitely will probably give more chance to swing the ball in the evening when the temperature drops as well. So it'll be interesting how it goes.
And then there will be some because of the bit of moisture in the air, bit more swing.
Yes, yeah. I don't know if it's going to be humid there at this time of the year, but
Okay.
generally there's more dew this time of the year. So they did a World Cup ages ago. I mean, last 2 World Cups there. So 96 World Cup was a good example where the dew became second inning was hugely affected by dew.
Right. Well, and what are we picking sort of do we expect a bit of a fight back from England in this one? Or do we think
Yeah, I
that
mean,
India will actually
so
cruise on now?
they are playing Jimmy Anderson, who swings the ball, you know, and that's where sort of you need to get early wickets with the fast bowlers, and then your spinner come in. Like he's a skillful bowler, and he got break for a game. So I hope that, like, especially if you know it's a day-nighter, someone like him might be able to take some early wickets and come back later and take some wickets. So I think him playing would be a huge advantage to England. Because like on a if the, it's another like spinning track, you know, like the spinners are not experienced enough to exploit the conditions or not experienced enough in those conditions, so you need your fast bowler to take a few wickets, and I think someone like Jimmy probably will. So it'll be
Yeah.
interesting how it goes.
It'll be interesting
Because
that this is like
Rohit Sharma is I mean he's a great batsman, but against a red moving ball, you know, you've got a chance, you know, you've got a chance to get him out early. And I think who else? I mean, Jimmy Anderson is probably the best guy to do it. So
Oh, look, you look at that first test when he was basically bringing it back a long way from outside off. And as you say, you take a Rohit Sharma who's with the way that he plays and the shots that he does play, there is that gap between bat and pad.
And as like a swing bowler would probably can get him out early. Because someone, if he bats, he just bats so well, you know. So if you don't get him out early, you sort of, you know, he's kind of like who scores quick runs as well. So, I mean, if Jimmy Anderson gets him early, that means that your colleagues and other guys are in early with a new ball. That will be interesting.
No,
And
absolutely.
the toss is quite vital in India, you know. You know, it's
Yeah.
been like both the games, the team won the toss, won the game, you know.
Won the
So.
game. So we call the game off as soon as they've done the toss and just say award the game. No, so we look forward to that. As I said, starting in 2 days' time. And just before we wrap it up, as we expected, I was trying to get the show done in half an hour. It was never going to happen, was it? But we'll try and get it done before the second inning starts for Australia. Just to wrap it up, the show, Kyle Jamieson, great to see the recognition. Effectively, that's what it is, with recognition for him and what he's achieved in the year, and to be picked and to basically, was it $2.8 million New Zealand that he'll get paid if he plays every single game, every single minute, which we know won't happen. So, but you know, at the end of the day, that's the value that's been put on him, and well deserved.
Oh, I guess so. I mean, he has a phenomenal last 12 months. Like, if you look at if every format he's played, he's just done so well. And he did well against India as well, so that helps, you know. Overall, I think he's, I mean, he's been the fine for New Zealand, like, you know, yep. I mean, since it sort of came in onto the scene, because like, again, like, you know, not like, never had a reputation, mm-hmm. but he sort of consistently sort of scored, I mean, obviously took wickets, and he's actually quite handy bat too, you know?
Oh, he's a very handy bat, isn't he? Very yeah, handy bat, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's a good package. I was still surprised that he went for, he's gone
that
for
price?
Yeah, because it's just not that, it's just like, he hasn't played cricket there.
I was just going to say, he hasn't toured. I mean, Australia, he went to Australia, but he didn't play in Australia, really.
Yeah.
I don't think. So he hasn't really toured anywhere. He's only played in New Zealand and New Zealand conditions.
Yes, yeah. And especially in India, like where the boundaries are short, the players got different skill set and everything.
Yep.
But I mean, based on his international stats, probably that's why they've, you know, someone, because what's happening is like people, like the owners pencil out, or the coaches pencil out a few players. Mm-hmm. And they can switch. I mean, Morrison like went for the well, like obviously the highest ever paid player. So
yep.
I think like if Jameson is the right guy for the team, they probably can push. And I think that's what happened.
Yes, absolutely. And I sort of think, you know, one of the things I look at Kyle Jameson, and just because of his height, he can take the pitch conditions out of the equation, because he can make a full ball bounce up high. You know, he can get that bounce out of the pitch even with a full ball, and the only thing that you can't, it's not something you can learn in your game or bring to your game. You only get that because you've got height to be able to enable you to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like high release point is a positive, but the thing is like if a tall bowler guy misses a yorker,
yep,
it's easy to hit, you know.
Yep,
because
yep.
of the, like,
bounce,
you know,
up
the angle,
because of the bounce,
you know, it just comes
yeah,
nicely on the back, so
yep.
it's just like and the thing is, like, with the guys like him or the guys who are coming up and doing well, it's like how they keep on improving.
Yeah.
Because people would have plans for him, because they've seen enough videos and everything, they would have planned for him. So how fast he moves on and improves is the key.
I think, you know, that's the thing that's impressed me about him and his progression in a year, is the fact is that, you know, when he came back from Australia, he spent a lot of time on the bench, but he spoke to a lot of the Australian bowlers and learned, he changed sort of the way that he attacked the crease in his bowling, you know, as opposed to running in. He's really started to, the Australian bowler said, well, you just go hard, you just go run, and you run hard at the crease, and you bowl fast, and you put everything into it at the crease, and it's all momentum just leading up to it. And so he actually changes bowling style a little bit to do that, and it seems to have actually paid dividends. And I think that's something that he'll carry on doing. He's got that work ethic to keep developing his game and looking at where he can improve. And he keeps that sort of mentality up, then it means that he'll be able to evolve, which, you know, all top players have to keep evolving, don't they? Because if you stand still, everybody watches those videos and works out a plan against you.
No, exactly. And that's why I'm saying that that's the big challenge for him, is like now how he can sort of carry on improving the way he is. And fair play is, you know, good. Oh, Southie strikes Finch gone court corner. There you go.
He's having a great day. So... No, I mean, just to wrap that up, the other thing I like about Kyle Jamieson being sort of selected with all those dollars is the fact is that, in one sense, it also highlights that, you know, New Zealand cricket's being recognised as playing. Now, you know, we're at the top of the tree in test matches. We've been there or thereabouts in the one-dayers, in T20s, you know, there or thereabouts. And it's good to see that recognition coming through to saying that there's some New Zealand players that are capable of playing that top level cricket, and they're being looked at.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, that just helps that New Zealand is doing so well, you know?
Yeah,
in
profile.
In the one-dayers and test cricket, so fair play.
No, that's cool. Hey, look, I won't hold us up any longer, because I said we've already missed out on a Devon Conway special. So let's go out there and see if Tim Southee and Trent Bolt can pick up a few more early wickets to put them in some trouble. Thanks, Taz, for joining me on the show tonight. And well, hopefully we'll get you back again next week. And thanks to everybody that has tuned in. Simon. Hi, Simon. And Aaron joining us now. And he's probably gone back to the TV. But thanks to you guys out there for watching, and we'll see you again next week on Swinging from the Hip, where we'll bring you some more of what's going on around the cricketing world. Thank you.
Cool. See you.